Hi guys, once again we're back. We are on, guess what episode?
Is this 35?
Nope, 34. Close.
Okay.
We're trucking right along there. I'm getting real excited, man. But we're gonna have to think of something spectacular to do for our yearly, you know, for our year anniversary. We are definitely gonna have to come up with something. Just if we can get some people to send us some emails and you know, get some fan stuff going on. We might do like a t-shirt giveaway or shot glasses. Hell, I don't know, gift certificates, something.
Nice.
Anybody have any suggestions? Devheads and Hiddlestoners at yahoo.com. Real simple.
Yep.
Hey, Carrie, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm absolutely amazing. I'm Excellent. Jen, by the way. I always forget to do that. We've got Carrie over here on the line with us, too.
That's right.
Trying to help keep me on track, which is a full-time job in and of itself. Oh my goodness, I was looking, matter of fact, thinking about our year anniversary for the podcast, at least. I'll have to double check with my streaming services, but it looks like our very first specific podcast was a Johnny Depp, and it was done on Mordecai. Why would we use that as the first podcast?
Oh, that is a really interesting choice.
I will seriously have to, because Barry's the one who suggested it, I will seriously have to ask him what he was thinking. And what I was thinking for letting it go. But that being said, Halloween, around Halloween will be our year anniversary.
Halloween.
Yep. So, I can't decide if I want to do Loki, Sylvie, or Jack Sparrow for my Halloween costume this year.
Wow.
What do you think? What do you think you're going to... You'd make a good Loki.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like to go as Pine in the Night Manager.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, that's not really... Good segue, by the way. That's not really... You know, there's nothing specific about that particular character. You know, it's not like the Mad Hatter or Sweeney Todd or... Shark from Crimson Peak. Those are very specific, time-dated outfits at the very least. Jonathan Pine just looks fucking good in a suit.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of where I'm going. You know, I literally want, you could spend like $100 or more, you know, a little bit on like doing a Loki, or you can, no kidding, get one of those Brioni suits. That they wore for $1,200.
Oh.
You know, the shoes for $500.
Oh, man.
I mean, it looked amazing.
I'd pay $100 to drink his bathwater.
Yeah, He looked great. And it looks great in a suit.
Oh, he does. He's got that perfect form. Yeah, muscular, but it's slim, very, very defined muscle. He's not all bulky like Chris Hemsworth. Yeah, very low-key, but very, very well-maintained.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful man. Yeah, they both are. Quickly, before we get into the Night Manager, just checked. Once again, I've been checking off and on all day. Nothing on the trial yet, guys. No verdict as of yet. We are actually recording on Tuesday, the 31st of May, 2022, and we're sitting here at about 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, and no verdict yet. So we'll keep you posted as quickly as we know you'll know. And when the verdict comes down, I will probably post a little something on the blog, and I'm certain that I'm going to record a bit and post a special 20-30 minute podcast with it. So anyway, keep on the lookout for that. Any other news you think, Phil, you hear that's worth mentioning maybe before we get started?
No, the big item would certainly be the trial.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I hate TMZ. I hate the show. I hate the magazines. I hate the whole picture of them. I really do. But damn if they did not come through this time. They brought to the court's attention that they also had a copy of the video that Amber Heard showed that put Johnny in a really bad light. However, they had the original, not the edited version, that Amber chose to give to the courts. And once, oh yeah, it was bad. Then they started going back over everything that she submitted. Everything. Every picture, every recording, everything. Because of finding that one to have been edited, therefore it's a fake. It does not represent Johnny Depp, honestly.
Right.
Yeah, they were not happy.
Yeah, it's damning.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
When did this happen?
Last week sometime. I would have to look it up to give you the specific day. But I know it happened last week. It was all over social media about it. So,
gotcha. Last week. Wow.
So, high rise. I'm sorry. I'm looking through my notes still. Guys, TMZ, I may not like you, but I damn sure respect you. Hey, no getting around that.
Yep. No doubt.
All right. Well, now, as you said just a little earlier, we're going to revisit the night manager. And the reason we're doing this is because I'll stop and listen to our podcasts every now and then, you know, just to get a feel for how I come across, you know, in the recordings and stuff. And, you know, listening to that one, it seems like it was, Carrie, I believe that was the first one you joined us on.
Yeah, it was. That's
and,
right.
Yeah, and you were actually working at night.
That's right.
Called us from work. Now that's a fan.
Yeah,
that's a fan, guys. I'm telling you, not so much a fan as a really good friend.
Yeah.
Called us in from work, and we did the podcast over the phone. That was fun.
That was fun.
But yeah, it really seemed kind of. We didn't get to hit a lot of the salient points on each one of the episodes.
Okay.
And it's by far, there was only one series, TV series, that I like better than The Night Manager. And that's my boy, Alex O'Loughlin, in Moonlight, CBS series, only showed for one season. Then we had the writer's strike and everybody forgot.
Yep.
Back in the... early 2000s?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've had some significant ones, and I think that was the last big one. It interrupted a lot of great shows. I remember distinctly it interrupted Battlestar Galactica, the Reimagined, and I was like, oh, come on, guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah, that has got to be my favorite TV series to date would have to be Moonlight. It's the plausible explanations on vampires, their habits, and their weaknesses just really strikes a whole lot more true than, say, garlic, holy water, and steaks. I mean, hey, you stake me through the heart, I'm going to die. Does that mean I'm a vampire? Come on, please.
If you show me a crucifix, I won't recoil in horror.
Yeah, but it's not because it's going to burn you.
Exactly.
All right. But yeah, so if you guys get a chance to check it out, do so. It is not on any streaming service that I can find. So all I can say is hunt you down a DVD. I've got two sets of the Moonlight series DVDs. So yeah. You know, just in case one wears out, then I've got the other as backup.
Nice. It's very thoughtful.
Yeah, I'm so good to me. Yeah, I should probably give myself a raise, you know.
You should.
So we are going to revisit The Night Manager. This is part one. We're doing episodes 1, 2, and 3. And, okay, do you have a favorite episode, Carrie?
You know, actually did kind of like number one, just because I thought the way they just sort of did the character intros was really, really great. I don't know, probably around like 3 or 4. That seems to be my favorite Tom Hiddleston in anything that we do. I like episode 3 and 4.
Right.
I
think I mentioned this to you earlier when we were on the phone, but I rewatched the series again today, which is usually, that's my habit. Watch whatever we're talking about the day of the podcast. And, it just floored me because I usually just watch it. I binge it. It's 6 hours. So I put it on in the morning, early afternoon and watch it. And then, by the time I'm ready to go out, do anything, see anybody, talk to anybody, I've already watched the whole series.
Okay.
So I never really paid much attention to the breaks in the show, where one episode ends and the next one begins.
Okay.
And because the whole, it flows so seamlessly. It's beautiful. But, it astonished me to realize that the real dirty dealing, the real hardcore stuff, didn't even get started until episode 4. And that's halfway through the broadcast. That's halfway through the series.
Yeah. It was structured really, really great. You actually didn't meet Roper until more than halfway into the first episode.
Nope, you don't meet him until the second episode.
Yeah.
Yep, nope. I checked on that because I was thinking the same thing, that you actually were introduced to him a little bit earlier, but you hear Burr talking about it. But you don't actually see him until episode 2.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Trivia question.
Okay.
Do you ever get to see Angela Burr's husband? And if you do, when? What episode?
Angela Burr's husband. I'm going to go with...
Speak up.
Oh, jeez. This has got to be later. Five?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first time you see him, you actually see him twice. When their house gets robbed, quote unquote.
Right.
Her husband gets hit on the back of the head, and fortunately, he does not sustain any permanent damage, but she's being told very sharply to back off. But that's episode 5. We'll get to that in part 2. You see him for the first time in episode 5. He's sitting in a chair asleep with a book stretched across his belly.
Yes. Yep. That's right.
And let's see. The first 3 episodes are really more grounded in character introduction, backgrounds, and situational backgrounds.
Right.
You learn a lot about Jonathan Pine, the main lead character, who, of course, is played by Tom Hiddleston. And you get to learn quite a bit as well about the, quote, bad guys, the arms dealers, Richard Roper, his girlfriend Jed. He's got a son that you meet who is key in the first 3 episodes. Matter of fact, the child has not... I've looked him up. I tried to see if he had done much. And he's done a few things with BBC.
Yeah.
As adorable as that little kid is, he really hadn't done much. And it may be just that he doesn't want to or his parents don't want him to. I don't know. But
yeah, he's still pretty young.
Yeah. Well, not anymore, he's not. This came out in 2015. He's...
Well, that's true.
Yeah, he's well into being a teenager by now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that would be... Noah Jupe, J-U-P-E, Noah Jupe, is the kid that plays Daniel Roper. I was on, were we on the phone when we figured out how tall, what is her name, Elizabeth DeBakey is?
Yeah, we talked about that in episode Halloween.
That's right, we did.
Yeah,
she's 6'3". She's an inch taller than Tom.
Amazing.
So, you know, here I was thinking she was just wearing some super great heels in all those scenes where they're eye to eye. No, she's having to slouch, so she's not taller than him.
Yeah. They had to put her in flats.
Or barefoot.
Just so, you know, yeah. Just
like
so
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Exactly.
But yeah, man, I catch. And she is so beautiful. I mean, she's really.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and not really beautiful, I can't say that. She's very sexy. She has this undefinable sex appeal to her. Just, it doesn't matter what she's doing, putting on her makeup or walking on the beach or reading a book or what have you. Hell, she even looks good crying, which, of course, that always pisses me off.
Yes, right.
Dude, I do not pretty cry. There's no such thing with me. You know, you don't get a few tears and, you know, the gleam in the eyes and the trembling lip. No, you get full out snot blowing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the noises, absolutely. I'm not a pretty crier either.
Oh, no, not at all. Well, you know, it takes a hell of a lot to make me cry. So, you know, if you make me cry, you've done something.
And then you're getting the full show, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then you get to deal with the aftermath, which is even more fun for me. And now, Richard Roper is played by none other than Hugh Laurie. And most of you guys would know Hugh Laurie from House. He was the title character. And we mentioned this briefly on the other podcast. He did want an audition for the role of Jonathan Pine. They told him he was too old. He didn't have the right look. They didn't, you know, they wanted him for Roper. He'd be perfect. Nope. Up until the day they started filming, he argued with the producers and the director about his role. He wanted to be the good guy for once. And unfortunately, he didn't make it. But
that's right.
But he's got the look just for the scruffy, you know, kind of low maintenance, hood rat.
Yeah. I don't know. He's got that little bit of dread, you know, when he wants to. He kind of broods a little bit.
Oh, and he's got those eyes.
Right.
Ooh, don't ever, That's one that I would not, like, be running to go meet. He just scares me.
Yeah, he'd be scary. Absolutely.
Oh, especially if you've ever seen him, if you've ever watched House, guys, yeah, you'll know. He's a scary individual. But coincidence, you know, everybody, 6 degrees of separation. There's always something connecting you to something else. But this is actually very interesting.
Okay.
I didn't know until today. Hugh Laurie is also a published author. He published a book in 1996. Let me see if I can find out, if I can find my note, tells me what it's called. It's not Gunrunner, what is it? Sorry guys, I do have my notes organized, I just have so many of them. Gunseller. Gunseller is the name of the book. It was published in 1996. It does not say by what publishing house. But it is also a book that centers around an arms dealer and, you know, the arms trade, the illegal arms trade overseas. So that in 1996, and then he's in this one in 2016.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. He's not the only one who has a bit of a history with spy or thriller or illegal gun running movies. Tom Hollander. Not Tom Holland, guys, don't get excited. Tom Hollander, who is also an amazing actor, by the way. He plays Corky. He plays Major Cochran. He also has done many different spy movies. He was in Hannah in 2011, Enigma,
awesome.
Enigma in 2001, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation in 2015, and he was also in the BBC's Cambridge Spies in 2003. Lots of spy movies, lots of gun movies, lots of war movies.
Gotcha.
Okay, aside from the two main, aside from Roper and Pine, who's your favorite character? And I could probably guess.
I gotta go. And you had to take the two main ones.
Well, of course, it's no fun if you're always gonna pick one of the main ones. Come on.
Well, and it's hard.
Okay.
Really, to choose between those two, but I would probably, I don't know. There's kind of a like burr.
Yes. Not who I thought you'd pick.
Probably.
Jed.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, she's just cool. I like her.
Well,
she was awesome in Tenet.
She eventually grows some balls. You know, in the first few episodes, specifically 1 through 3, I got what she was doing there. I got why she was there. I understood why the movie needed her. But, she struck me as the epitome of the, oh, poor pity me. I made bad decisions and ruined my life, but it's everyone else's fault. And now I have to deal with this because of something that I did, but I'm going to blame on you. And, the whole damsel in distress routine is so overdone and so last century. You know, it's just, we've all been in tight spots. That doesn't mean we, give away our kid and let somebody buy us on the auction block. Saying that if you've been faced with that choice and had to make that decision, that you made the wrong one. Not at all. I'm just saying the way they approached her character with it just seems like a big poor pity me. I'm the one with such a hard life while I'm living in a multi-million-dollar mansion. So I didn't have much use for her. But now, as the show progressed, she certainly changed my attitude about her.
Yeah. Well, and she ended up being, I think, a lot more complex, too.
Much more. That's another thing, is she disrupted me as kind of a blithering airhead. When, in fact, toward the end of the series, you start seeing this incorrigible, strong, smart, driven, focused individual that you don't see in the first part.
Yeah, and she was a survivor,
Absolutely.
She was under the radar. You get the impression for at least a few years was...
pretty rough.
Not quite, yeah. Like, not quite what she seemed in that debated, detection, if you will.
Right, and it's very obvious through her conversations with Richard Roper that he's used to her being very docile, doing what she's told, not bothering him, staying out of his business, and that's what he's used to, that's what he expects. And so when she actually starts allowing her true self to come forward, he's confused and upset and frankly quite a bit angry.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, she is definitely a complex character, much more so than you would believe in the first couple episodes of the series. She actually becomes quite a hero in her own right by herself toward the end.
Yeah, and they couldn't have done it without her, if you will.
Oh, no, they couldn't. No, they absolutely could not have.
Yeah, she was invaluable, so...
That she was, she becomes a very key player later
on. Yeah, and so, she kind of did the slow burn. I appreciate the actress's patience. that girl's good.
She is. Gotta give it to her. I mean, they're all very good actors and actresses, but I do believe she sells her character much, much better than any of the other ones. And I mean any of them. Tom, sorry, baby, but she does. She has taken a character that you can't even begin to think she's anything like to start with. In real life, actress versus character. And she becomes it. She sells it really well. She is phenomenal.
Yeah, great job. Absolutely. And another Marvel person, so anytime you got Marvel people...
Oh, is Island, she? How's she a Marvel person? Where's her connection?
She was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
What?
The second one. She was Aisha, the big, giant, like, gold lady.
You're kidding me!
Yeah, that was her.
Oh my god. All right,
that's
well, there you go.
I remembered her. I remembered her from that and Tenet, you know.
All right, so that goes...
She was straight up gold, you know.
Yeah, all right. I will have to recheck that because I have that DVD. I will recheck that tonight. And,
yeah,
you know, not that I don't trust you and believe you, baby, but what do I do with everything I get? I verify.
Yeah, you got to check it.
But, yeah, so...
Exactly.
And, guys, I know the blog. I hear about it. Trust me, I do. I'm working on it. And we're also working on getting my man Carrie here up on the blog where he can also post and express feelings, ideas, thoughts. You know. So we're working on that too. And yes, that's another column that needs to go on the blog is the connections. Not necessarily between Depp and Hiddleston, although that will be there too, but like a Marvel list, you know, of all the different actors and actresses. I do believe you and I were trying to come up with a list of actors and actresses who had not been associated with Marvel at one point in time.
Right,
and I think we only came up with, like, two.
I wonder if we can add Hugh Laurie to the list, though. I don't think Hugh Laurie is.
Oh, you're right. He hasn't been.
That's right.
Good deal. All right. So,
awesome. I don't know what he would do, but he would be incredible.
Hugh Laurie?
Marvel something.
Oh, let's see. Hugh Laurie. What can I see him as in Marvel? Actually, I can see him as a couple of different characters. I could see him as the Gremlin.
Okay.
I could see him, let's see, no, that's DC, sorry. Gremlin pops in my mind first and foremost.
There's a few DC characters I can see him definitely.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
The DC Comics has the penchant for making less believable, more insane characters, which suits Hugh Laurie to a T.
Totally. That's right.
But, yeah, now, this little film fest here was directed by Miss Suzanne Beer. She's her first TV direction. Yeah, directing anything for TV. This is her first go at it. Did a phenomenal job. Actually won an Emmy for it. Let's see. But she had done other feature-length films before. Never had done the made-for-TV. The writer of the book, however, John LeCare.
That's right.
This is his sixth adaptation of one of his books, I believe.
Wow. Okay.
Let's see, you had...
Smiley's People.
Oh, wait, I've got a list. I always have a list.
Yeah.
Now, all of John LeCare's books have been brought to life by British producers. Every single one of them. You have The Spy Who Came In From the Cold. I believe that one was actually a feature-length film. I don't think it was a TV thing.
Mm-hmm.
But The Spy That Came In From the Cold in 1965, I do believe. And I was shocked. I didn't realize this was John LeCare. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Right.
Love that movie, or that series.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah.
That was in 1979. Smiley's People, as you said, in 1982. And then you have A Perfect Spy in 1987. And then A Murder of Quality in 1991.
I remember... he was playing at least once. Smiley's People, I'm very sure, was that apparently incredibly, incredibly funny son of a bitch, Alec Guinness.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I ran short on time. I always run short on time trying to do my research. But yeah, eventually I'm gonna have a Friends of the Stars episode.
Right. We talked about that.
Yeah, and we'll just focus on the co-stars of the various different series and shows that these guys have been in, because these are some amazing actors in their own right. You know, yeah, they're secondary to the star and everything, which, you know, is to be expected. But, yeah, they deserve a little recognition of their own. They really work hard. They really do. And it's the extras and the co-stars and the smaller parts that actually make the movie. So, you know, shout out to all of those guys. They really deserve it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we're going to have to talk more about that later when we're off air, about when we're going to do that particular show. Or yeah. Shows, yeah. I mean, come
that's
on.
That's a great idea for a show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and this is another thing blew my mind. They started filming in, I'm wanting to say March 19th, if I'm remembering correctly.
Okay.
Started filming in March 19th, 2015. They started filming in Zermatt, Switzerland.
Okay.
They moved to London in the UK on April 13th. Went to Morocco on April 20th, Majorca, Spain on May 31st, and rounded up the principal photography that wrapped on June 3rd, 2015. So, I did not name all the places they went, just the major ones. Now, that being said, from March 19th to July 3rd, they visited 6 countries and over 30 different sites to film.
Yeah, wow.
They
really moved it along.
Everything was filmed on location. When you're in the Swiss Alps, guess what? They're actually in the Swiss Alps.
Yep.
When in the hotels, those are actual hotels. They're not sets. It's not
That'd
like...
That'd be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Check those out. Yeah.
Oh. Yes. I have a quote for that. Now, this was printed by The Telegraph, the magazine.
Yeah.
And I don't have the author of the article or the date it was published, so I do apologize for that. But they printed, quote, according to the surprising location manager, the supervising location manager, Tom Howard, guests staying at the Essandi Resort in Marrakech, in Morocco, that's where they filmed for the Queen Nefertiti, supposedly okay. In Egypt. That was actually filmed at the El Sadi Resort in Marrakech. I'm so sorry. Guests staying at the El Sadi Resort in Marrakech, Morocco, during filming were confused by changes to the interiors made by the production crew. So much so that many guests would return from a day's sightseeing only to question whether they were, in fact, in the right hotel.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. They filmed in Egypt, Morocco, Spain, Switzerland, Turkey, and the United Kingdom were the six countries they filmed in.
Nice.
And this was also around the same time that Hiddleston was very extensively rumored to be the next pick for James Bond. He was supposed to be following Daniel Craig in 007's footsteps. However, that has not come to pass as yet. We're still hoping, but yeah, I don't know why. I really don't get it. Because he was set for the role of James Bond. No contracts had been signed, but, you know, it was there.
Right.
So, you know, why that didn't happen, I don't know, and I can't find anything out about it. BBC has a bad habit of being really close-mouthed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was pretty much Daniel Craig, though.
Might have been. But,
they
not only...
a ton of money.
Yeah. Not only was Tom Hiddleston set to be 007, the director, Miss Beer, was also touted as being set for the next director to direct what was the name of that one?
The last one, No Time to Die?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I have it written down somewhere, but you know how my notes are. But yeah, Miss Suzanne Beer was also set, supposedly, to direct. So neither one of those things came to pass. Now, this series was also, God, it was widely, widely acclaimed through the Emmys. Let's see, I think it was, how many nominations?
I would love to know this number. Yeah.
Now, this is just Emmys, okay? Now, just awards? Yeah. Just awards. It was nominated for 36 different awards in different shows. Golden Globes, Emmys. I mean, it was just nominated across the board. 36 different nominations in all. But for the Emmys alone, just the Emmys, 12 nominations. I do not have the number that was won. I did not get that. I couldn't find that information. I'm sure I just didn't go to the right website, but hey, it happens. Some of those nominations were Outstanding Limited Series, Outstanding Lead Actor in a Miniseries or Movie.
Nice.
Outstanding Supporting Actor for a Limited Series or Movie. That was for Hugh Laurie as well as Olivia Colman. Both of them, in two separate, one male, one female. Both of them were nominated.
That was good.
Oh, yeah. Outstanding Directing from a Miniseries, Movie, or a Dramatic Special.
Sure.
For Miss Suzanne Beer. And Outstanding Writing from a Miniseries, Movie, or Dramatic Special.
Right.
And that was Mr. David Farr is the one who actually wrote the screenplay for this. Amazing work. It's a fantastic script. It played out well. Bravo.
Yeah. Like we were talking about everything earlier with the pacing and, you know,
right.
And a little later, it was all fantastic.
Oh, yeah. The only episode that kind of confused me a little bit was episode 2. It wasn't until further into the series that I was like, oh, okay, we're doing flashbacks. Got it. You know.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, just because it would jump from here to there to here to there, and I'm going, what the hell is going on?
Exactly. Yes.
But yeah, and you only see her in the very first episode, but there's gotta be a shout out for Miss Azure. I'm sorry, I lost my notes for a second. Hold on, Miss Azure. I'm not sure how to pronounce her name. Atika, who plays Miss Sophie Alakan.
Yeah. She was some miracle.
All right, somebody just tapped on my studio door here. I've been asked to give a shout out. I just got dinner brought to me.
Right.
Great catering service. Got to say hi to my guys. Stone Children, right?
The Stone Chicken.
I am so sorry. The Stone Chicken. So shout out to the Stone Chicken. Appreciate you guys.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, they keep me fed so I can do this kind of shit, so.
Right on.
But yeah, so, definitely. I guess, yeah, look them up, sure. Coming soon to a restaurant near you? Coming soon to a nowhere near you, there you
and
go.
Remember, it's never a war crime the first time.
Yeah, never a war crime the first time. You know, I really, really, really don't appreciate you telling my kids that. All right. So, yeah, I'm trying to talk my housemates into checking out The Night Manager. I think they'd both appreciate it, but, you know, they're not doing it simply because I want them to. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotta be bullheaded, but that's okay.
Yes.
Let's see, there's a few other things. Now, anybody who's watched the series but has not read the book doesn't find anything strange in the fact that Angela Burr is pregnant. Okay, number one, in the book, Angela was not Angela. She was a Lawrence. Angela was actually a male character.
Okay.
They decided on female for, you know, kind of rolling with the times kind of deal. Now, when she went to audition for the role of Angela Burr, she was very honest, told them that she was pregnant, and then made her argument for why she was the best pick for the part because she was pregnant. And she made the case that, trying to find her name, the woman in Fargo.
Frances McDermott
was pregnant, and now she was not really pregnant. She wore a baby bump. She wore a prosthetic.
Our character was.
But the character was, and it added a lot of tension, a lot of drama to the scenes. And let's see, she's quoted as saying, "The pregnancy added to the drama, the domesticity versus the extraordinary nature of your job, and I think it adds a weird power to this part too." And the very, very, again, ironic part is that McDormand later handed Coleman her Oscar for Best Actress for her performance in a movie called The Favorite. It came out in 2018.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. And do you remember Joel Steadman, the really goofy kind of U.S. Marshal that came over to help Angela Burr? Obviously, they have history together and blah, blah, blah. Do you remember that character?
Right. Yes, yes.
Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know why I think I should have known, but I think I should have known. He is actually, just like Hugh Laurie doing House, he's actually a British actor doing an American accent.
Of course.
The other movie he was in was also doing an American accent. He was in Homeland in 2011 and played the CIA director. He also pulled an American accent in that one. And I thought there was a... That was not odd, but there was something off about his diction. But okay. I couldn't really point it out as to what it was, but that there you go. That's it.
Yeah, some people can do it. Some people absolutely can't do it. You know, and so native speakers, you know, we'll pull it out.
Oh, I'll tell you what, though.
Daniel Craig and Knives Out, you know, he's trying to do that in Kentucky, and it was just awful. I was like, no, you're not doing it.
Yeah, right. I know. Just don't.
Yeah.
See, this is why Kevin Costner does not attempt an accent.
Exactly. Right. It's like, nah, I'm just going to.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
I'm just going to talk in the same monotone voice and expect you to get excited. Anyway, but with the whole accents and voices and stuff, you know, I pointed out all the time that Tom Hiddleston is an incredible linguist as well as a very, very good mimic. I looked for 45 minutes the other day. I still cannot find the when he went to Comic-Con the day after. He did a kind of meet and greet with the local DJ out there. And during that that interview, he actually mimics the host. And he mimics him so well, I had to stop and rewind it a couple of times. I thought my track had slipped. I thought that the vocal track had slipped. It was that precise. Just amazing. And I looked for that thing for like 45 minutes the other day and could not find it anywhere. I know I'm just not using the right keywords or something, but...
Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I wasn't watching it when it came on. I was actually bebopping around the house and doing some cleaning and stuff and just listening to it. Mm-hmm. So when I stopped to watch it, he actually slid down in his chair, got into the same position as the host with one foot on the floor, the other foot on the opposite knee, you know, elbows down, slouched back, kind of a little falling down into the chair, and mimicked his posture, mimicked his stance, and then mimicked his voice. It was incredible.
Yeah. But, total mimicry.
Oh, yeah. And I'm still trying to get somebody to call me back on that, as far as that goes. But, I know another person who is also an incredible mimic. He claims his language skills are not that great, but he can pretty much mimic anybody. Anybody, anything. He's very good at it. Eventually, I'm going to see about getting him on here. Maybe he'll have an opinion on the whole language versus mimicry thing. And for those of you who don't know, which is probably all of you, I'm actually talking about my housemate Tommy. He's incredible.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he'll start with the Bugs Bunny characters, Daffy Duck and Yosemite Sam and Foghorn Leghorn, and then he goes from that into, you know, well-known movie characters and actors, and I'm like, okay, stop, that's it. Nope, enough, can't do it. But yeah, he's really good at it. It's incredible. It really is amazing. I can't mimic myself half the time, so... you know, very difficult for me, but
right.
Apparently it comes natural to some people.
Yeah. I have a few accents and they're pretty stock.
Now you do a couple of really good accents.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to get you, we'll have to put you on the spot one of these days. I'm not going to do it right now.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to do it right now, but eventually I will.
Cool. Yeah, not now. Oh my God, not
now. Oh, let's see. Oh, yeah, the script was also changed to accommodate Burr's pregnancy, or Miss Coleman's pregnancy. And it wasn't altered in any major sort of way. However, just, you know, a few lines were added, some were taken, you know, just a little back and forth, because there is mention of her pregnancy a couple of different times throughout the series. And they don't make it physically... obvious. You know, it's not like something that you're bound to notice just by looking at her.
Okay.
But it is mentioned several different times, and I think she is 100% correct in saying that the, you know, the pregnancy really does add the drama, especially in the later episodes, which we'll get to those when we do part two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's pretty crucial there.
Oh, yeah. Brief synopsis of the first three episodes. Jonathan Pine is the hotel night manager in Cairo at a hotel called the Queen Nefertiti during one of the many eras of political unrest in Egypt. This is where he meets...
spring.
Yep. It's spring, yes. New spring.
Yeah.
He meets Sophie Alakhan. She's a guest at the hotel who is involved with a weapons dealer, Freddie Hamid, whose family is also very affluent in... Egypt, Britain, U.S., everywhere. He receives information about a weapons deal possibly in the works, and because of his ties to the British military and MI6, he turns the information over, which leads eventually to Miss Alakhan's death. She ends up being murdered after becoming... Pine's lover.
Yes.
So he ends up finding
scene
her.
Where she dies with God. That dog. I hated that dog.
Oh, it's not the dog's fault. You're just pissy because the dog lived and she didn't. I don't care who dies in the movie. As long as the dog lives, I'm good.
That dog. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad he lived, but I hate that it had to be that dog. Anyway, sorry.
Aw. But yeah, I mean, it was... And the... Oh. You want to talk about acting?
Okay.
Hats off. Oh, man. When he walks in and finds her. Hiddleston's character, Jonathan Pine, walks in and finds her beaten to death and laying on the floor in his hotel, steps away from where he was, you know, where he was standing. And he heard nothing and saw nothing. They never do explain how they got in and out of her hotel room without him seeing them.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
never well, do cover hey, that, but...
total professionals.
But, yeah. Okay, I can cry on command. It's easy. Most women can. Guys, don't delude yourselves. Most women can cry on demand. All they gotta do is want to. Anyway, guys, on the other hand, most of the time, don't have that ability.
Right.
However, his acting roles over and over again, because the scene when he finds her and literally breaks down, once again, the pretty cry. Couple of tears, yes. You know, the red eyes, the
pretty cry.
The hitch in the voice and the trembling lip. Yep, it's all Hiddleston. He does it very well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's visual poetry. I'm sorry.
That boy's good. He's good.
He is very good. But this is what sends him into to discuss things with Miss Angela Burr, who is an ex-MI6 officer. She recruits him, and he decides he's going to infiltrate Roper's little soiree here and his inner circle, and he's going to bring them down simply for the murder. But it becomes much larger than that, much bigger than that. It becomes to mean so much more as you go through. In the end, he is asked by Yusuf, his one faithful and true friend in Egypt throughout this whole thing. Yusuf asks him, or Yusuf's brother asks him, "You're doing this for Miss Sophie, aren't you? For what happened to Miss Sophie?" And he says, "Yes." And
yeah.
No. He says,
yeah.
Yes and no. Because yeah. It's not about her anymore. It started out that way.
It's huge. Yeah, but it is a big, big, we're talking all manner of international massive weapons. F-22 Raptors, the name, I'm like, oh my God.
Napalm.
You know, actual sarin gas.
Sarin. You can make sarin in your bathtub. That's not difficult. But
Yeah. But we're talking like weapons of mass destruction.
But,
you know, this
but
guy
you know,
is,
doing so without killing yourself, that's a little trickier.
But
the napalm, dude, there's a reason we stopped using it.
Oh, that stuff you can actually make even easier than sarin gas.
Really? Okay.
Well, oh, yeah. It's gasoline, some sort of gelatin, and styrofoam.
No, but you got to have the right kind of gelatin or it won't stick.
All right.
I looked it up. Of course I did. That's what I do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I
was just, curious.
Well, no, I wanted to, I wanted to see what the big deal was, because they do make a big deal out of it. Like when he originally finds the list and gives it to his contact, Ogilvy says, "Oh my God, Jonathan, there's napalm on this list. Do you know what that could do?" And I'm going, okay, so why is that such a big deal? You know, why is that, over everything else, such a big deal? Why is the napalm such an issue? And so I had to look it up and check it out, see what the issue with it was. And the fact is, this stuff burns until it burns out, okay? If you put napalm on something, light it on fire, and drop it into the ocean, it's going to burn until the napalm runs out. It will burn underwater. It will burn with no oxygen. It will burn anything. It will burn through metal. It will burn through stone. It will burn through anything. This stuff you cannot wash off. If you get hit with napalm, or property gets hit with napalm, it's gone. Forget it.
Pretty harsh.
There is no recovery. And if you get a drop of napalm on your arm, you best hope there's someone around who can cut it off before it gets down into your system.
Yeah.
Because once it hits you, once it touches you, you're dead. You're gone. There's no protective gear that you can wear for it. There is nothing you can do to protect yourself from it.
All kinds of nasty things on the list.
So that's why it's such a big deal. It's not because it's hard to get a hold of or hard to make. It's because we all kind of agreed, we don't want to go out this way. So everybody all at the same time decided to put their sticks away, essentially. But, you know, a lot of the smaller countries, the poorer countries, will do anything they have to continue to survive, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the whole sarin gas, when she explained why she had, when Angela explains why she has such a hard-on for Richard Roper, the field day, school field day.
Yeah.
That
was awesome.
It was an amazing scene. That being said, it broke my heart. And the thing about it is, guys, you know, I don't get political on here because that's not what we're about. The thing about it is, though, that the stuff that you see and hear in these fictitious series, the problem is it's going on all around the world. It's happening every day. And I try my best not to focus on that, because really, not a lot I can do about it where I'm at this point in time. There may come a time. It's not now. But yeah, when that scene plays out, it really makes you understand that this kind of thing is going on all the time. It goes on. It goes on in your backyard. You don't ever know it. You know, it goes on across the street, and you have no clue. So, but yeah, it literally broke my heart, her describing the school field day when she finally got there.
Yeah.
And the differing reactions. She said she, of course, was nauseated and absolutely just mortified at what had happened to these kids, and Richard Roper was thrilled to find something else he could sell.
Of course.
But then...
gold-plated bastard.
Oh, but you see the same attitude when Elena kills herself at her, what is the... What's the name of it? The... Quinceañera. At her quinceañera, her 15th birthday. She hangs herself with the necklace that her dad gives her.
Right.
And as they're leaving, Richard Roper is bitching because he's going to have to reschedule the meeting. And, you know, she was really inconsiderate and she should have thought about all this before she decided to off herself and blah, blah, blah. But at least the canapés were good.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And then he looks at Jed and goes, oh, my dear, I'm so sorry. I was rather rude, wasn't I? And she's just like, yeah.
Right.
It's kind of almost a, yeah, I got used to it by now. But yes, the first three episodes, I don't know of a series, even a longer series, that is better put together than this one.
It's sharp. It is sharp.
It flows really well, and I have not even gotten to half of my notes, but we're going to have to hold those off until part two, because we're coming up to an hour here, real close. So, next week, I consciously wanted to not go too far over this time. We've got something real special coming up next week. Any idea what it is?
It's a birthday.
You sound so thrilled. Oh, yeah, my God.
Well, I am thrilled.
It's a birthday.
I mean, it's not my birthday, you know, but...
Oh, you just wait. You just wait. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert, we're going to be doing something for your birthday.
Sweet.
Not sure what we're going to be doing just yet. We're going to be doing something. But yeah, so what I'm thinking is maybe go over some of the highlights and lowlights of Johnny's career.
Okay.
Now, there are some, I've got buku, many, many quotes. That I've picked up over the years and just jotted down stuff that I thought was profound and wanted to keep it. And stuff that I thought was incredibly silly or crazy or stupid. And still wanted to keep it. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, what's the... I can't remember what movie it's in, but polish a turd, it's still a turd. But, you know.
That's right.
But go over some of Johnny's quotes and some of the movies that he's made. Some of the ones that are, I think, closer to his true character than others, and you know, some that I think are really a stretch for him. As usual, our birthday episode, just like we did for Tom back in February, is going to be a 2-hour long episode, so you know, be prepared, watch it. And anybody who's got any fan stories, anybody who wants to give a shout out, dude, I can't guarantee he's going to hear it, but you know what, one day he might. So you know, you want to send me an email, I'll mention you on the podcast. Absolutely. Got no problem doing that. And for all you cosplayers, people who know cosplayers, people who want to be cosplayers, all of you, give me a shout out, man. I'm looking to get some cosplayers that do Depp characters as well as Hiddleston characters on the show here. Probably do that via phone. Not an issue. But yeah, I want to get some inside look on what it's like when you dress up as that character and how you're received with the basic, you know, the public, the crowds, and how you deal with that.
Some,
I got to hang out with some really cool pirates this weekend, actually.
That's right, you did. We're working on getting him on the show, right?
Yeah, well, it was a bunch, you know, it was a bunch of them.
Oh, right, right. But no, I'm talking about Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, Eric.
Yes.
I can't remember his last name, and hey, maybe he'd prefer that I didn't say, but
well, that's
for now.
That's okay. Well, yeah, you probably want to ask him before you go blast
him. Right. But yeah, he's remarkable, and I mean, we've caught him around town for years.
Right.
But they head up a kind of a pirates society, and these folks are incredibly, incredibly authentic.
And I'm telling you what, guys, I'm headed back to Mobile sometime around the end of June, beginning of July. I'm going to see what I can do about talking to my travel agent about maybe actually meeting this guy for myself and talking to him personally about the podcast and just talking to him, getting a little feel out and see what's going on, see how he acts and how he responds to the whole being on the show thing. So
we have mutual friends.
So we're going to see how that goes. Next week, birthday, lots of Johnny. Week after, probably going to go ahead and wrap up Night Manager. What do you think?
Yeah, it'll be that turn. Yep, 4, 5, and 6.
All right. So 4, 5, and 6 will be in 2 weeks. Johnny will be next week. Yeah, I love saying that. Yeah, I'm going to be doing Johnny next week.
Nice. For at least 2 hours.
Oh, for at least 2 hours.
Yes.
Gonna have all the Johnny I can handle. Yeah, I
got it. That's right.
And guys, I know there's been a lot said about him throughout the trial. Any of you that have watched it, and okay, any of you who have not been living under a rock, have heard the the negative things. And thing is, guys, why does it matter really to us personally? We're never going to have the opportunity for it to mean much to us. But, he's a great actor. He's a fabulous person. He really cares about his fans. And I don't care what that bitch says, he really cares about his partners, too. That is very apparent in every single one of his relationships other than this one. Which reminds me, Depp Week, birthday, Hiddleston Week, Night Manager, Depp Week, we are going to wrap up the Many Loves of Johnny Depp.
Oh, excellent.
So, I have a plan.
Yeah, we're getting like the beefy ones now. Now we're getting into it.
Oh, we're getting into the long term relationships. But yeah, friggin', I have a plan. You know what that makes me? Happy. I always have a plan. But anyway, guys, so glad you could come and listen to us again, and we're going to continue broadcasting just as much and as often and as long as we possibly can. We're already looking forward to our year anniversary, which will be in October. So keep listening. Hit the like, hit the share, hit the join, become a member, follow us. You can find us on Facebook, Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners Group. You can find us on Insta, sometimes when it's not irritating me, at Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners. You can find our blog, DeppHeadsHiddlestoners.com. No and, no the. And let's see what else. Email Yahoo, DeppHeadsAndHiddlestoners@yahoo.com. Anything else? Did I miss anything?
No, that covers it. Man, that covers it.
All right, and I am looking into maybe in 6 months or so getting a dedicated line for the podcast for Depp Heads and Hiddlestoners. If we're broadcasting, if we're recording, we'll put you on the air. If we're not, you can leave us a message, and we might still put you on the air. So, you know, I'm looking to see what that's going to run and how we would go about doing that. So be patient with me, guys. I'm working everything out as I go.
Excellent.
All right. Well, Carrie, stay on the line for just a minute. Guys,
sure.
Be safe. Be good. Keep a look in your rear view. Don't let anybody come sneaking up on you.
That's right.
We will see y'all next week for the birthday celebration of Johnny Depp. And until then, stay safe.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.